Afternoon is Kathleen Parson. She is the presiding judge for the city of Temple, and she's been that judge there 4 years, I believe. Before that, she was with the city attorney's office in Temple and worked as a briefing attorney for one of my favorite courts of appeals, the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. She also teaches at the Temple Police Academy and is the mother of two children, so she wants to get through and get back home to the kiddos. Let's give her a big hand.
That's the first question of the session. How old are my children? 6 and 18. And so my running joke is that that's how long it took me to forget childbirth the first time, instead of saying that I've been married twice, because I'm from a conservative community, and I wasn't born there, but I was raised there. How many folks do we have here who are courts of record judges? So we have a handful. Sometimes we don't have any, and when we don't have any, it becomes a novelty to talk about it. And so I just everybody else court of non-record. And also wanted to check and see, are there specific questions coming in here about appellate procedure or just general interest? Anybody have something just burning so that I make sure I answer it up front or go forward? Yes. Right. Has partially paid? How long ago? Oh. Once you enter a plea, okay, if you're in a court of non-record, that becomes final 10 days out. So I think they've missed it. If they pay $1. But procedurally, then the question becomes, what do I do about it? Do I just refuse it? There's two answers to that. I'm going to tell you what I think you should do is go ahead and let it proceed forward and let your prosecutor handle it on appeal to get it bumped back down, because you're less likely to draw a grievance or a problem from that process. I have heard it argued that you could go ahead and just tell them you're too late. I don't think that's a good idea. Okay, I've had people come up afterwards and really push that concept, and I think you're risking a grievance. Okay, just let it go forward, let it come back. Now, can you tell the prosecutor? That's another question, right? And I would probably, if you don't already have a policy of just sending it over to him, I would just make sure I sent that one. I wouldn't probably highlight the dates or anything like that. I would just send it. He or she needs to do their job and just let them do it. There have been grievances on that kind of thing. And that actually is a great question, because it leads right into the presentation. So let me get out of the way so everybody can see it. Mechanics of Appeals, we had a lot of jokes about what would we name this class, but we decided we didn't want to say the Mechanics of Appeals, the nuts and bolts, because that just sounds really dry. And it's actually a fairly interesting topic when you start really getting into the details of it, and the legislature thought so. There's a possible change coming, and I'll alert you to it as we go through the presentation. But I did want to first start with this letter. Okay, they've mic'd me on the side here. Hold on. Let me make sure I'm not going in and out. We are being recorded today, and I want to make sure that y'all can hear me. So if there's a problem, then you can't hear me. Really, just somebody wave at me and say, let me know. But I'll do my best to keep up with the microphone. Okay. So, for courts of non-record as well as record, obviously there are different ways that people perfect appeals. This letter is actually a real letter. I had my clerk rewrite it, one of my clerks, just to give you, so that I wouldn't reveal who this happened to, because the judge actually, as a result of this letter, wound up getting a grievance filed against her, and she wound up getting a private discipline, but there was a disciplinary action that was taken. Here's what happened. Dear judge, I think you made a really bad decision on my ticket yesterday. There is no justice, and you know this. I think you have no common sense, and that officer who testified should not be allowed to have his job after all. The nonsense he spoke yesterday. He obviously doesn't know how to testify or write a ticket. I would like you to rethink my case and change your mind. A judge should be able to see reason and do that without being embarrassed, don't you think? But if you can't be a man and do that, then I would like a different judge to hear my case, and so I would like to appeal to a different judge. They said the county judge can help me, and I guess I will have to make him have him make the right decision if you can't. I'm representing myself, and I don't have much money, as you know from yesterday, but since I know I can't lose again, I guess I don't mind saying I would pay you double whatever you gave me yesterday just to see that justice is going to happen in my case. I will be there, so just give me another day to get this straight. I mean no disrespect to you, Judge. I am a truthful man, Henry Jones. Okay. Sat on the desk too long. Judge was not really paying attention. How many people go into the court every day? How many judges go into the court every day? Okay. That's a lot. I mean, you get judges. There are lots of judges in our state who don't go in every day. Maybe they go in once a month. Yes. Right. I don't know. I would probably treat it. If you're in a court of record, and you are, that is true. So you would interpret it accordingly. If you're in a court of non-record, it's not required any longer, or it still is not required. Right. And so, you would go ahead and interpret it as an appeal bond, an attempt to appeal. We are not a court of record. We have looked into going to court of record. Yes. In a court of record, I'm going to go ahead and let everybody know what you've said because we're recording it. Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Right. Right. Well, and the fact is, as the judge was pointing out, in a court of record, you're probably going to maybe interpret this as a motion for new trial, and rule on it accordingly, and then see what go from there, because that would be the first thing that you would expect to see following a decision adverse to a defendant. And that is true. Let's move forward then, and that actually brings us right into. This is really to be viewed as a roadmap. So for courts of record and for courts of non-record, you want to go ahead to the back of your materials. It's in the very back. If you want to just take that thing out for your court or take them both out if you're just interested in learning about both, but we're going to use it as a where are you on the map process, trekking through the appellate timetables, okay? And so we're actually going to cover both courts of record, courts of non-record, and if you want to pull that out, it's a way for you to walk through the presentation. We're going to reference back to this repeatedly so that hopefully it becomes an easy tool for you to take with you today. And the overview of what we're going to do is, and this is just to point out too, in your presentation, you'll notice that courts of record and courts of non-record, the page is divided in half. So as you walk through the presentation, the left side's always going to be referencing the process for courts of record. The right side always referencing courts of non-record. And you can see, if anything, what's happening in each side so that we're contrasting them enough and also teaching everybody what they need to know for their particular court. Okay? And, you know, basically, and this is back to the judge's question in the back, what happens if they've already paid and more than say, 10, or in some case, in a court of non-record, 10 days have elapsed. It's concluded if they pay the fine. There is no appellate review. And once they pay it in full, it's done. Okay? In a court of record, your chief first question is always going to be, was a record made? If so, then written briefs go to the appellate court. This is our overview. County court decision, final or appeal, is taken to the appeals court as long as there is a fine in excess of $100 or more. Briefs, and then they go from there, briefs and record from the city to the appeals court. And you can seek review of the decision with the Court of Appeals, the Texas Criminal Court of Appeals. So that's your overview process. When you go to a court of non-record, fairly simple process, trial de novo to the county court, right? You just try the case over. County court decision is final, or an appeal can be taken as long as the fine is $100 or more. written briefs to the appeal court, so they get back onto similar. And you can seek review with the Court of Appeals, the party can. That's obviously discretionary, and we'll get to that. Another handout, really, and it's too small to look at on the screen. The only purpose of this slide is to let you know, and this comes from the Office of Court Administration. It's their flow chart, and if you want to get real technical, we are here, okay? And we flow from here up to the county level, bypassing the district court to the courts of appeals, then upward to the Court of Criminal Appeals. Okay, so that's the route we're going to take today. Just note, an appeal can be prosecuted by a city attorney or a deputy city attorney with the consent of the county attorney. The county attorney actually has to consent if it's a deputy city attorney. Okay? But first things first, perfecting the appeal. When does an appeal get perfected? And bear in mind, some of this course is not stuff that you're actually involved with. It's what happens to it once it leaves you. We're going to talk about that as well. We're going to spend the bulk of our time, though, talking about how we interact with the appellate process. Courts of record require that a request be made of the record. That request can come from either party or even the judge. How many of you just automatically record if you have a court of record? Anyone do that? There's really no duty for the judge to do that. For those of you who may be even thinking about going to courts of record, we're in the process. Not required to do that, either party or the judge. But there has to be a recording device in the courtroom. It has to be able to be recorded. You have to have that capability if you're court of record, as those of you who've gone through the process of going to court of record know. In a court of non-record, and this side's going to stay blank for quite a while after this, no record. So if appealed, it's a trial de novo. Brand new trial, brand new case, starts over. Okay. Consequently, it all stops here for just a little while. We're going to focus on courts of record. The court can elect to have a certified court reporter in the courtroom. Judges of record, how many of y'all have a court reporter that you call in? Okay, excellent. The good judge, and I'm sorry, your jurisdiction judge, if you could let me know. Which court are you, sir?
Richardson.
Okay, thank you, Judge. Richardson has one on retainer, and that's a really good option. You can bring one in when you need one. And I obviously y'all have recording device for otherwise, correct? Okay. Yes, sorry. Only what people request is required to be recorded. There's no appeal without a record unless it's only on error, and we're about to get to that. Appeal then is only on error on the face of what is basically your notes and your clerk's record. So it would have to be an error evident. And as you can see, there's not meaningful appeal at that point. So you're normally going to get a defendant requesting, I would imagine. Yes, Judge. That's right. And we're actually going to have a good example where a judge has rendered an opinion saying there is. That's true. That's true. Judge was saying sometimes, if you hit the recording device, the appellate process is a little more invoked than it would otherwise be. So that is correct, Judge. And as we said, if there's no record, there's really no meaningful review of the evidence or of the merits of the case. There wouldn't be a way to do that. It's just simply review of any errors in the clerk's record. So we're back, we're here. In the court of record, is there a record request? Then you have your trial. Courts of non-record, we're going to get to this shortly. You've got other things that can trigger, okay? And we'll get to those in just a moment. We're going to do the standard thing. Let me alert you to something, how many of you have had courts of non-record had someone show up with their own court reporter? Court reporter. In a non-record court. Have you had it happen? In a non-record court. Have you ever had a court reporter show up? But it has happened, and it can happen, okay? What happens a lot of times, this happened to me when I was a prosecutor, and I was really stunned by it. It just never dawned on me. And I thought, well, surely there's something in here that helps me get this person out of the courtroom. No, in fact, there is no appeal on the record. But if you've got a traffic stop that is the reason for a DWI, for example, you might have a defense attorney coming in to record that and get that officer on the record early before the prosecutor maybe at the county level has even reviewed the case. So that can happen. You can't tell them no. unless you have a written order saying, you know, then I think if you had a written order saying, we don't record here. And this recently was talked about on the listserv. I don't remember which jurisdiction was asking on the judge's listserv. Anybody participate in the judge's listserv? It's a good handy device. It's really more like a chat group of, you know, email back and forth online. And Ryan or Hope can hook you up to that. Just let them know that you want to participate in that. If you have a question, you can post it. And we all do our best to try to help answer each other's questions. Because a lot of times, I don't know about y'all, but a lot of times what you're doing, you get pretty comfortable being on the island, you know, and being alone in your decision making. But it's a great place to do that without the public's input. It's really just a very private area where we can talk about different, you know, if you have a question and you don't know the answer. And usually somebody out of all of us, you know, will know an answer or think we know an answer. Or, for example, I just rewrote all my judges' rules, my bench rules, and I had several judges willing to just give me theirs and let me look at what other people were doing just to see if, are we current? Do I need to rethink some of this? Because I'm the only judge in my jurisdiction. I'm it. And I don't have a colleague to bounce anything off of. I do better making decisions when I flesh them out a little bit. That's not everybody's style. But if it is your style or you're interested, let Hope or Ryan know that you want to get on the listserv. It's simply anytime someone posts on it, it'll pop up on your email. And you can read it and reply, or you can read it and never reply. There's no duty to do that. But it was bounced around on the listserv about someone wanting to come in and record in one judge's courtroom. I don't think there's anything completely wrong with saying no to that. I would caution you. I mean, I used to do, I used to hear grievance stuff. I used to be a regional grievance hearing examiner in my area. And I would say that your best bet is always to have a reason why you do anything. And if you're going to refuse somebody being able to come in and photograph, it's the same thing as bringing in their own court reporter, right? So if you have a rule on the books that you've gone through and made that rule, and that's just a rule for everybody, I think you could say, no, this is my rule. We're not doing that today. You know, your prosecutor certainly is going to hope that you have that rule, but I don't know that it's incumbent upon you to do that or not. There was an interesting, very lively discussion about that. So here we are. We're about to have trial. Let's move forward. This is just an example of a state's notice of appeal. I put it in part because it's somewhat unique. States don't have the right to appeal the way that a defendant would if the decision is adverse to that defendant. But the state can appeal in some instances, and it was the best example I could come up with of a really good, you know, request notice, well drafted, to contrast with largely what we all tend to see a lot more of. A lot more like that letter we saw at the beginning, right? And a lot more like what you tend to see. Obviously, the person has taken something off of the internet, just pasted in. There's blanks that should be filled in that are not. There's no, you know, surety at the bottom. They didn't sign it, right? Again, question, what happens if you get this sort of thing? It's obviously faulty. What's the answer? Anyone want to guess? It's a court of record. I'm non-record, excuse me. The person has filed this notice of appeal, okay? They say it's an appeal bond. They filed it in your court. What do? That's all. You don't hear anything else from them. Bingo, exactly right. Did everyone hear the judge? His response was send it on up to the court and let them do their job, correct? That is true. In a court of record, the judge has to approve, but that is an ministerial approval. It's not you agree with it, you think it's proper. Your clerk is charged with doing that if you're a court of non-record. Judge approves the record on appeal in a court of record, although his clerk approves the clerk's record, the clerk papers, certifies the papers. But really, it's not discretionary. If someone invokes appeal, that's why that discipline happened at the very beginning. If someone invokes appellate jurisdiction, you lose jurisdiction. Whether they are correct is for the appeals court to make a decision about. If the appeals court may, I mean, you can know that they're wrong. This is wrong. This is completely wrong here. It's wrong, okay? Or they have the wrong amount. Maybe it's not zeroed out or blank. They've just put the wrong amount. There's different remedies depending. You know, if they're incorrect in your example at the beginning, Judge, where you were talking to us about the person filing out a date, There's no jurisdiction. They have not invoked jurisdiction. But they have invoked temporary jurisdiction for purposes of deciding whether there is an appeal. Okay? So you send that over, it comes back. This one, for example, here, you've got the surety is completely wrong. They haven't filed a notice of appeal. If you're in a court of record, it's a problem. They haven't even invoked it properly at all. This one issue, if that's all there is, the judge at the appellate level is going to let them amend their appeal bond, okay? If the amount is wrong, if the amount is either too low or too high or empty, they're going to let them amend it. That's the remedy at law for that. If it is jurisdictionally flawed, they just did not invoke jurisdiction properly, that's going to come back to your court in a perfect world where the prosecutor catches it and does their job, okay? That there is that contingency. Yes, Judge? You're a court of non-record, and so what you want to do at that point is take the papers of that case along with this, file it on into the file, copy it, send over the original to the Court of Appeals. Okay. Yes, it would. And, yes. Yes, they're in Dallas does too. El Paso has, let me just repeat. You'll need to check Chapter 25 of the government code. It should go to the county, I believe. But you want to check, and there's a reference later in the materials where to go. But you're going to check Chapter 20 code of the government code. Check the code for where your appeal actually lands. It should. It's probably going to go to the regular, and that appellate court probably jurisdictionally only would have jurisdiction over cases filed in the El Paso city limits. That would be my guess, but that's where you would want to verify that. And if there's a special provision like that, that's actually where you find it. Y'all are almost to the end of the presentation and we haven't moved forward yet. Let me go ahead and get us going, okay? This is an example of what's called a 2714 letter. And if you hearken back to your materials, when you're in a court of non-record, sometimes jurisdiction can get invoked from a 2714 letter. That's right here. That timetable will tick 31 days that they have to perfect by bond, okay? They have 31 days to file their bond. And actually, what the duty that gets triggered there, this one caught my clerk by surprise. We'd never had one. We've been around a while, folks, but we'd never had one of these. She got one. It sat for a while. She came to me and said, oh, good heavens, you know, what do I do? They didn't file their bond, and should I send it up? And I said, actually, you trigger the letter. Let's go forward. The letter itself triggers that you send back a letter to them. I would probably certify the letter and let them know the amount of the bond. Okay. So it had been sitting for about 60 days before she actually told me that it happened. And she said, well, it's past time. And I said, no. Actually, now send the letter, and they've got 31 days from the day that you give them notice. So don't let it sit for 60 days, I'm telling myself. Yes, Judge. Right, okay. I'm sorry to hear that. Let me read it to you. This is an example of a 2714 letter and just the style of the case at the top. Dear Clerk, please accept this letter as the appearance for John Smith in the above referenced case pursuant to Article 2714B of the Texas Code of Criminal Procedure. The defendant, John Smith, hereby waives jury trial and enters a plea of no contest in the above referenced case. Defendant gives notice of intent to appeal. Please advise me of the fine and court costs assessed by the court in this case and the amount of the appeal bond required by the court. Please allow 31 days for appeal. Thank you for your cooperation. Sincerely, Willie Williams, State Bar number at the bottom. Yes. What happens if you place a... Let me make sure I understand the question. I need to repeat it, though, for the... Yeah. But let me repeat it and make sure I understand it. Yes. Right, a minor in possession of alcohol. Yes. Right, all the things they're supposed to do. Right. Let me answer your question, okay? And then if we need to follow it, we can, because I need to phrase it properly, okay? A 2714 letter only applies to a court of non-record, okay? It does not apply. That's why it's not on your trigger here. This is not a statute, a creature of a court of record statute, okay? It's a statutory creature only for courts of non-record. So in a court of non-record, if you have a 2714 letter filed after you've put a person on probation, okay, they've been on probation maybe even for a period of time. Right. The attorney isn't happy with it. And your question is, if you're in a court of non-record, what's happened there once they send this letter in? Yes, he can appeal the case. And the answer, the reason, but he's entered a plea right here. I'm entering a plea on behalf of my client, and I'm appealing. And you have not found the person guilty. You have not rendered a verdict. You have not rendered a verdict. You have withheld your rendering, correct? Yeah. Exactly. You have withheld your finding. They have not been found guilty. It's not an appealable order. That is true. However, now they are entering their plea, and the date of this letter is when they've entered it. And this one isn't dated because it's an example. But the date of the letter is the date that they've entered their plea, and you move forward with a 2714 letter.
It's because it's not an appealable order that that's effective.
Yes. Now, if you're deferred, now some courts do have as a condition of a deferred order, some courts do require that you waive your appellate timetable. Okay. And if that's been done in writing, there's a good argument that it might not be appealable at that point, but I would still send it over and have it bounce back rather than acting like a court of appeals on my own. Okay. Let me move forward now. Yes.
Can the 2714 right be invoked orally?
I would say that it could.
The guy shows up.
But I would probably hand that person a piece of paper and say,
"Here's your 31.
Write it down. I need something to file." Yeah. My clerk has to have that in writing. Perfecting the appeals. Motions for new trial. We have an area that might be changing, okay? But courts of record, take notice. Motion for new trial required before a notice of appeal can be filed. That has not changed, okay? Motion for new trial filed within 10 days of the judgment. The court can extend that to 90 days for good cause shown. I live in a military community. I live in a hospital community. There are times when people have good cause shown for things. You know, they went immediately into the hospital. They got deployed. Things happen. And they got the letter to me, you know, later than they needed to. Motion for new trial is not necessary in a court of non-record. This is where the change could happen. Motion for new trial filed within 1 day of judgment. It's not required, but there was a legislator that didn't like this, thought it was problematic for whatever reason, and that has been expanded to 5 days, okay? It hasn't been signed by the governor. It's not the law yet, but I doubt the governor is going to veto it. He always could, though. You never know until it's final, right? Courts, a notice of appeal, your appeal bond, perfecting your appeal. Now, here we are at courts of record. Notice of appeal has been filed in a trial court within 10 days of ruling on the motion for new trial. The court notes the date on the notice of appeal. The appeal bond gets filed in the trial court, and that perfects the appeal. Appeal bond is twice the amount of fine plus the costs. Very similar in some respects. The appeal bond's filed in the trial court within 10 days of the judgment, along with a notice of appeal, and that's what perfects the appeal there. The appeal bond, too, is also twice the amount of the fine and costs, the exception being the 2714 letter, which bypasses municipal court all the way over to the county court in a trial de novo. Okay. And again, here we are, motion for new trial being filed in a court of record. You've got that 10-day timetable ticking. Overruled by motion of overruled by operation of law on the 30th day. Okay, but in a court of non-record, motion for new trial gets filed, overruled 10 days later. There is a possible appeal, other process in a court of non-record, and we'll talk about this more shortly, but appealable order, if an order is made that is appealable, an appealable order, there's 20 days to appeal that order before you move forward. As a practical matter, some courts of non-record do 10, and I tend to do this. If I'm ruling on something and it has the potential for appeal, I'll go ahead and set that trial date out 20 days. One, because I like to have my docket numbers show that I didn't just have to reset and reset and reset. So I'll just take it into account up front. It's not a real big problem for me, but it's not needed to do it that way. Yes, Judge, you had a question. As a practical matter, your question is there a reason to rule on it if your ruling is going to be, I'm rejecting it?
Right.
Yeah, there could be. The only example I could really come up with when I thought about that question is, and I don't think that the person has the right to file a motion for new trial in dangerous dog cases, but if they do, I would just rule quickly and not wait and not have a debate about that. Just let them go on because your city's holding that animal. I would say if there's some justiciable kind of controversy happening there, you might want to just move it on out of there. As a practical matter, in my jurisdiction, by the time it gets to county and gets put on the docket, it's a couple months later. So a few more days is not just a huge deal, unless there's some kind of fast-track timetable like a dangerous dog case. I don't really see why there would be any reason other than something like that. You know, if I knew a person had a health issue, I might move it on forward, just let them go on and go. You know, we also have a VA treatment facility where I am. We just get people who are having whatever they're having issue-wise, and I will sometimes just say, no, right here in court, thank you, you can go ahead. And it moves it forward. From a prosecutorial standpoint, I always liked that the judge would do it as a prosecutor because that meant that they have less time to get ready, okay? As a defense attorney, it really didn't make a big difference. I've done both sides of the equation. To me, it didn't really make a big difference because if I missed an appellate timetable, I was toast. So I just stayed on it whatever it was. So, but if they're self-represented and you're the prosecutor, you probably would love that judge to just sign it because then you know you've got finality quickly. Yes, Judge, there was a question in the back. You don't have a choice. Yeah, you would. And that's what happened there, is the judge didn't recognize what it was and let it sit. And it was, you know, dilatory. Points of error on appeal must be raised in a motion for new trial if you're in a court of record. Okay, since it's not required in a court of non-record, it's not necessary that they be raised there. And, you know, it doesn't even have to be filed. A motion for new trial isn't required. Overruled, again, we've kind of covered this, but within the 31 days in a court of non-record, and the state is not entitled to a new trial, okay? Motion for new trial granted within 10 days can be granted within 10 days in a court of non-record, overruled by operation of law on day 11. And again, state not entitled to a new trial. We'll get to some exceptions regarding state's appeal rights shortly. The reporter's record is certified by the court reporter and paid by the appellant. That's, you know, a good reason to go to court of record. It does put a halt on, you know, having your prosecutor have to drive over, as in my case, they have to drive over and leave the office. Their boss doesn't like it, so they're pushing us to go to court of record. 60 days from the notice of appeal to file a reporter's record in the municipal court, and then it is sent over from the court to the court of appeals. Municipal court clerk in a court of non-record actually sends a copy of the original case papers in the case and the appeal bond over to the appellate court. Okay, so the duty here is on the clerk. There's more duty on the judge in a court of record. 60 days within the notice of appeal, appellant has to file a written list of the items that they wish to be included in the record, and the state then has a written list of items that they have to be file as well. Again, silent over here. This isn't triggered at this point. So here we are. Where are we on the map? You've got a final order. You've got a court of record. You've got a notice of appeal filed within the 10-day time frame. They perfect the appeal within 60 days, or they didn't perfect it. The case goes over to county, and a decision happens there. Either the decision that it was not properly perfected, or it gets heard on the merits, and we'll talk about that briefing process very shortly. Final order in a court of non-record. You've got the 10 days to perfect the appeal, motion for new trial not necessary, perfecting the appeal, and then the case goes to county. I've just got some references at the bottom of these. Hopefully they still coincide with the slide. I believe that they do, but I want to just let you know that this is a reference down to the bottom, okay, just to help you navigate. The municipal judge has to approve the record on appeal, as we talked about earlier, and the municipal court clerk sends the entire record over to the appellate court. Again, nothing triggered here, no activity. The appellate court is the county criminal court, the county criminal court of appeal, or the municipal court of appeal. So if there is neither of those, then the county court at law has proper jurisdiction. For courts of non-record, the appellate court is going to be the county court. Okay. Again, appellate court, just check for specific statutes for your county in Chapter 25 if you're not certain. That's exactly where you go to find that. And all the different provisions for the different courts where they've created these creatures of statute where they hear, like El Paso and Dallas County, for example, it's in that code. That's where it's required to be placed as far as where you find the law. Yes, Judge? Yes, charters definitely vary. There are a lot of different, well, there are different types of cities as well. So you have different types of cities as well as different types of courts and how courts have been created, different requirements on the judge. Some courts didn't require that the judge, for example, be an attorney, and now state law controls that by and large. Some cities were set up requiring that provision early on. And again, state can appeal in limited circumstances, and these are the list. They can appeal an order that dismisses a complaint or any part of a complaint. Thank you. They can an order that arrests or modifies a judgment, an order that grants a new trial, an order that sustains a claim of former jeopardy, and an order granting a motion to suppress any evidence or confession or any kind of admission of, if jeopardy is not already attached, and the prosecuting attorney has to say in their appeal that appeal is not sought for delay but only for justice. Okay, they do have to, again, they have to trigger appellate timetables and appellate jurisdiction in the proper way as well. Not usual, very rare, but it does happen. And I think we'll come upon an example here shortly where that has happened. The appellant's brief is due 15 days after the record on appeal is filed. The brief is due 15 days after filing the appellant's brief, so the response comes back. Each party provides a copy of the brief to the municipal court judge. This is a varied answer. How many of you in courts of record actually get that copy sent to you? Does it actually happen? I see nods. Anyone where that's news to you? Okay. I've had, over in another part of the state, I've had some judges say, wow, I didn't know that. I've never seen one. So you could, light a fire under your prosecutor and let him know and let everybody know they have to file it with you. But after that, in a court of record, you're done. There are no other briefs. Even if it appeals all the way up to the county, to the Court of Criminal Appeals, it's done. In a court of non-record, there's really no briefs in a trial de novo. You're just simply trying the case over again. If there's a defect in the complaint that isn't raised at the municipal court level, it can't be raised at the county court level, though. That is one thing that is final. It's not 100% do-over. So if there's a faulty complaint and that 2714 letter sends that case over, they've waived the fault in the complaint. And witnesses, they're attached in the municipal court level, and they stay attached until the case is completed and disposed of at the county level, because those witnesses will still have to testify. Obviously, a court of record, they're never going to testify again. They're no longer attached. Courts of record, the county court decision goes to the Court of Appeals, whichever appeal court is applicable to your jurisdiction. The fines have to be, though, as we pointed out at the very beginning, $100 or more or greater in order to, and that was set by the municipal court. Over here, what you have is it gets reset there. If it's $100 or more, then that's when it triggers that ability to take that appeal up. Otherwise, it's final at this stage. Yes, Judge? They can't do deferred. CDL holders cannot do deferred dispositions. They can't do them at all. Whoa, one at a time. Yes. Hands. Sorry? The county courts are doing that. The question is, can the county courts grant deferred adjudication on a moving violation under the Texas Transportation Code? And the answer is no. Does that mean they do it? I'm a municipal judge. I'm not a county judge. It's called masking. Yes. Great. Yes, Judge. You were told by the center, the training center? That's interesting. My county attorney is absolutely opposed and says no. You're saying at a court of non-record appeal up to county that county has statutory authority to grant deferred adjudication to a CDL holder? That's what y'all were told. Wow. I don't. Yeah, there you go. Yes. No, the fine. The court costs are set by statute. They can't appeal. Right. Yes, Judge. Yeah. I've heard that argument, too. My county attorney does not agree that it's not applicable. They don't grant it in my county. Defendant's notice of appeal is filed within 30 days of an appealable order, and state's notice of appeal is filed within 20 days of the appealable order. And a defendant in a court of non-record, defendant's notice of appeal is filed within 30 days of that appealable order, and the defendant files a motion for new trial, then the notice of appeal is filed within 90 days of the appealable order. And That state's motion or notice of appeal is filed within 20 days of that appealable order. Remember, we're one step up. We're at the county. Now we're going further up. Briefs and record on appeal is transferred to the County Court of Appeals. There's no new filings in a court of record. In a court of non-record, you start this process over like you did down here earlier. Now we've got appeals are starting to get, briefs to get filed and so forth. So again, 60 days to file. Here's an opinion where the judge in this particular case, and this is a County Court of Appeals, okay, Court of Appeals where no record was made. And it's a really good example of, they didn't make their record, they didn't preserve appeal. Did that come out in your materials? It's not in there. It is in there. Okay, excellent. It should be in the back. Great, okay. Again, it's silent. Why? Because it's not triggered. So see, you see the reverse. Now you flip this, you almost flip it over, really. It's not quite a mirror, but it's almost a mirror. Briefs are due within 30 days of the latest of the filing of the clerk's record or the reporter's record. Whichever comes in last triggers the 30 days. Appellee's brief due 30 days later. And the reply briefs are allowed at that point. Just remember, appealing to the Court of Criminal Appeals can happen. It's unlikely. Review is discretionary via the Texas Rules of Appellate Procedure, Rule 66. And petition for review has to be filed. And then the court may or may not grant that review. If they do, that's when the timetable starts getting triggered as far as briefs getting filed. Everybody re-briefs the cases. Review is granted, and that begins that process. Collateral attack can happen, though, and habeas corpus can get filed. Usually, though, this has been interpreted for the most part to only be invoked if the appellant is confined or restrained for that writ to be granted. It's a writ, okay? And you would look at the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure. You need to be aware it's not in the Code of Criminal Procedure, 1109 and 1114 for that, if you were ever tracking something through, watching that happen. It can be dismissed or maybe granted, and the defendant would then be discharged if it was granted, so they would be no longer confined or restrained at that point. And here we are, we're at the very end. Decision from the Court of Appeals can go up, and a decision could be reached there. If the Court of Criminal Appeals makes a decision, then you go back to wherever your final order was in a court of record. You've got your trial, and that's where the remedy starts happening. Let's say it's affirmed. They owe the money to the court at that point. In a court of non-record, again, you're going back to, at this point, final here at the county court, at the county court level, county trial. Sorry, right here. Thank you. Any questions? I want to make sure, but I'll stay for those who have further questions. Yes, Judge.
Let me turn this off.